From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 79 of Little Brother for the 2nd of April, 2022. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Flock Safety is an Atlanta-based company that sells automatic license plate reader technology, or ALPR, primarily to law enforcement agencies. The cameras read license plates and flag law enforcement officers when license plates from multiple Fusion Center databases and individual lists created by the officers are scanned by the cameras. In the last couple of years, more and more communities have been deploying the cameras in public spaces, though, meaning that you can't drive through these spaces without there being a public record of your presence there. Recently, Flock Safety have started also making this technology available to HOAs and other community organizations as well. The cameras are capable of not just recording license plates, but they also use a cloud-based AI to classify vehicles by color, body type, and sometimes make, model, and year. As with any cloud-based system, the data are in someone else's hands, and there is a high potential for intrusive analysis. I'm planning a special episode on this topic in the next week or two, so stay tuned. It isn't a new thing for network-connected printers to present as vulnerable. It's one of the two reasons why my own printer is on its own isolated VLAN with no internet connectivity. Vulnerable printers have been the targets of pranksters and intruders both, with the pranksters sending the printers amusing or annoying print jobs and the intruders using them to pivot to other parts of whatever network they're connected to. Well, hacktivists flying the anonymous flag are at it once again. This time they are specifically targeting vulnerable printers located in parts of Russia and using them to print out anti-propaganda messages, telling people how to use Tor to get past Russia's media blockade. The statements also emphasize that the war in Ukraine was started by Putin and that he and the Russian media have been lying to the Russian people. Last week, I spoke about Lapsus hacking Okta. Well, I have an update to that story. Amongst the artifacts that Lapsus were able to make off with at Okta was a spreadsheet full of passwords. This is what we in the business call a very bad thing. What's most interesting about it, though, is the file name, which is domadmins-lastpass.xlsx, which suggests that, of all things, this was exported from a password manager. What is this, amateur hour? Under no circumstances whatsoever should passwords ever be stored in plain text on a computer, since there is always a risk that the computer could become compromised. But for the love of all that is right and good in the world, why on earth would you export your passwords from a password manager where they are ostensibly safely encrypted into a spreadsheet and have the spreadsheet's file name identify it as a file full of passwords? The mind boggles at the incompetence. A significant problem with cloud-based storage is that actual management of the things stored is not in your control. Your cloud storage provider is only loyal to you to the extent that it is profitable for them to be so. They can be hacked, they can be subpoenaed, and the data might leak, depending on the competence and integrity of the people actually handling it on a day-to-day basis. Well, the news in this arena is that both Apple and Meta have turned records over in response to what they had interpreted as legitimate subpoenas or other legal instruments, only to put it right into the hands of social engineers. That's right, folks, the legal instruments were forgeries. This could happen to anyone and should be added to the list of reasons why you just don't put your stuff in the cloud. Remember, there is no cloud. It's just someone else's computer. The BBC is reporting that as Russia is feeling the bite of international sanctions, they are considering accepting Bitcoin from countries that they consider to be friendly as payment for gas and oil. They will be continuing to accept payment in local currency from friendly countries. However, nations that they consider unfriendly are being required to pay in rubles. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. And you know what that music means. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Week. We've got two this week. The first one up is pretty pedestrian. French cosmetics giant Sephora suffered a data breach that appears to have affected their rewards program. This exposed the personally identifiable information of around 500,000 customers who had been members of the rewards program prior to 2019. The exposed data contains the names, phone numbers, email addresses, and account numbers, as well as the customer's current rewards point balance. The data were exposed by way of an unsecured Amazon S3 bucket. Like that one. This next one was so unnecessary. A week or so ago, Ukrainians who relied on Viasat's European satellite network, KASAT, lost internet access. Now, when the story first arose, there was some speculation amongst my fellow radio enthusiasts about how this happened. There was no question, and it still isn't, that the Russian government were behind it, but as radio geeks, our first thought was that signal was being jammed. This was, of course, idle speculation backed by no research whatsoever, but I made a mental note of it so that I could bring out more about it later and tell you about it here. It would have been a headline item rather than the Pwn of the Week, except for one thing. They didn't really get jammed, per se. They didn't get blocked. They got pwned. Now, before I tell you what happened, it's important to understand that satellite bandwidth is a pretty precious commodity. While satellites can and are used to deliver broadband internet access, there isn't a reasonable way for a ground station that starts sending packets to know that other ground stations may be doing the same thing at the same time. Schemes that work on ground-based wireless networks and on cable broadband networks to control traffic and prevent collisions break down when satellite is involved because the distances are so vast that the length of time that it takes for the radio wave to travel to the satellite and back introduces substantial amounts of latency. You could actually send several whole packets of data before the satellite can get a message back to you to stop sending. And even then, this is important, the satellite is depending on you to actually stop sending. Meanwhile, if multiple packets arrive at the satellite at the same time, they can collide, rendering parts or all of them unusable. This requires that all of the modems at the customer's sites, including residences, are well ordered and properly behaved in order to prevent a problem. Again, the integrity of the network is fragile, and dependent on customer devices to behave well. This is important. Now, I told you that so that I could tell you what happened. Now, the first thing that Viasat observed was that a number of customer modems just started blasting the satellites with traffic. This pretty well jammed up the network, but the next thing they noticed was that the modems just started popping offline. Thousands of them, all over a period of about 45 minutes, and they weren't coming back online on their own. So how did that happen? Well, it turns out that the attack was entirely ground-based. A VPN appliance was misconfigured, and an intruder was able to hack into it and get into Viasat's internal network. From there, they were able to pivot to the command network, and from there, they just messed with the configurations of the end user's modems, first generating a packet storm and then ordering end user's modems to erase a key that was essential to connecting to the network. With that gone, the modem is offline. Now, of course, the good news is that a factory reset of the modems was all it took to put them back in service. Viasat have not stated what kind of a VPN appliance was compromised, nor how it was misconfigured, and honestly, they probably should not, just as long as they get it put right so it doesn't happen again. All right, we have a security advisory for everyone. If you are a user of Google Chrome, there is a critical bug tracked as CVE-2022-10906. The bug is a type confusion bug in the JavaScript engine. Most of the time, these just cause crashes, but in this case, it can lead to arbitrary code execution. This is the second zero-day exploit for Chrome this year, and we've just only ended the first quarter. Google have released an update, so check that your browser is at least version 99.0.4844.84. And if it is not, patch your systems. As usual, we will end this week's show with the fail of the week. This one goes to several parties individually. Facebook Messenger, Instagram, iMessage, Signal, and WhatsApp. And I'm very sad to see Signal in that list. It's pretty common in messaging platforms, especially those on mobile, to automatically turn text into links that you can click on if the text looks like a web address. This is a big usability enhancement, especially on mobile devices where the interface needs to accommodate a smaller screen and a lower accuracy than a laptop or a desktop computer. It turns out all of these apps were vulnerable to lookalike addresses. These are cases where you use Unicode characters that look similar to those in the Latin alphabet that we all know and love and use in the English language, but don't encode the same way. As an example, you could have a web address that looks like it goes to Google, but the O's, rather than being O's, are maybe the Greek letter Omicron, which looks just like an O. Or a Cyrillic letter O, like they use in Russian or Ukrainian, which also looks just like a Latin letter O. The address would look exactly the same, but it could go someplace else entirely. Now, in response to this, Signal, for one, have published a new version that will not automatically make a link if the string contains certain characters. As usual, be careful what you click. But if you use Signal as I do, in the interest of it being the secure messaging platform that it is, patch your systems. Thank you. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Funkaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Ed, Knight Rider 007, Funkaboo, Azriel, and Ethan Gregory Dodge for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or the topics that we've covered in it, or just want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well.